Hi.
Hi.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Claire.
And you're listening to Killer Vibes,
a true crime podcast.
Theories. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So we left off with the unsolved murder of Suzanne Jovan on December 4th, 1998. And we talked a lot about the evidence and about a whole bunch of pseudoscience. Sorry, I made a weird gesture with my hand and then Randy mirrored me. Anyway, so we talked about some pseudoscience. We talked about the evidence that was found, which was really minimal. And now we're going to get into the best part of this particular case, which is all of the suspects and the theories for what happened. As we've mentioned before, it's been 20 years and nobody's been indicted for this murder. Nobody's been arrested. So, of course, the lovely users of Reddit have a lot of interesting theories, and I'm going to tell them to you. We're going to get into pretty much the most romanticized theory. So our first possible murderer is James Vandeveld.
Oh my God, that's a fancy name.
I know. Very fancy and very like... If I was a murderer, I'd want my name to be that.
Me too. You know,
James Vandeveld. Arrested.
At it again.
At it again. Oh my God. Professor Vandeveld is Suzanne's professor and her senior thesis advisor during her time at Yale. So he's the...
The paper is coming back.
Yes. Don't worry. The paper will be back yet again. There are a couple times I mentioned the paper, so hope you're paying attention. So just some background on... James here. I don't know if he would ever listen to this, but I feel like he would hate me for calling him James.
He probably goes by Jim.
Jim. So Jim.
Or Dr. Vandeveld.
Exactly. I don't think he has his PhD. I think
he's a professor at Yale.
Oh, no, he has a doctorate.
He probably has his PhD.
I literally have that written down right here. Okay, anyway, so he joined the Naval Reserves after receiving a doctorate from Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts in International Security Studies, and he did his undergraduate at Yale. So this guy's super smart, is involved in the U.S. government, all that good stuff.
So if he murdered someone, you're telling me it could be covered up.
I cannot... deny.
He's got friends on the inside.
He's got friends on the inside. He could probably
He's
cover up a murder.
The band.
Yeah, I mean, he was a Naval Reserve guy and studied international security.
But also,
I can only imagine.
I doubt he's dumb enough to murder someone in that way if he's studied international security.
Exactly.
And
I don't know.
Military
but
stuff.
It's been 20 years and nobody's found anything, so I don't know. It's pretty clever. Anyway.
That could be a good red herring.
It could. It could be a very effective red herring. Anyway, so he was considered a suspect really quickly by the police. They said he was in the pool of suspects after some info leaked by a journalist. Ooh, journalists. So crafty. Okay. So he doesn't really have an alibi. And according to an article published by the New York Times, in 1999, so this is like him stating, I didn't do it, and I'm going to tell the whole world, here's my story.
Right.
So it's that kind of an article. And he says, and I quote, worked late in his Yale office, went home, and watched an episode of Friends that he had taped. He reheated a month-old burrito, and he surfed the channels, lingering on Discovery, to watch the big cats. End quote.
Month-old burrito?
Month-old burrito.
That's disgusting.
I'm glad that's the only thing you took out of that. He was alone at the time, so he doesn't have anyone to corroborate his story. He lives a block from the crime scene, and reportedly Suzanne was mad at him for a misunderstanding with her thesis, which she had turned in earlier that day.
He already read her thesis?
Yeah, so it was just a first draft of her thesis.
Those are still very long papers.
Very true. They're like 50 plus sometimes. For dissertations. So, I don't know. Maybe he was just really devoted to her thesis paper. But they had gotten into an argument. But, of course, he was her thesis advisor. So, I'm sure they had talked about the content
previously. Oh, you're
right. You're
right. I forgot about
that. So, that's probably where the argument popped up. So, I found his LinkedIn profile.
Creeper.
I know. Thank you. I'm glad you think that. That's what I am. And are telling the world. Okay. So, from his time at Yale, he posted this statement. So... quote, received the highest student evaluations in the Department of Political Science in every semester taught and received the second highest in all of Yale University, end quote, which is actually proven. That's actually true.
He said this about himself.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Narcissist.
It's LinkedIn. You have to be narcissistic. You got to be like, can do this. Oh, and I can do this. And I'm a leader, even though I've never led anyone. And I know how to use Word.
Yes. My LinkedIn says that. But.
Exactly.
I just feel like murderers are always narcissistic, and
yeah.
I'm just drawing a parallel.
Yes, but I feel like.
But you're right.
They're two unconnected things. Yeah, it basically. LinkedIn is LinkedIn. You can be narcissistic on LinkedIn. That's the only time. So I kind of feel bad for this guy because he doesn't have a direct alibi, unfortunately, but he doesn't really have a motive either. He was admired by all of his students. He was a respected member of the military. He worked with the police during this investigation and was compliant throughout the entire process. I mean, they, like, interviewed him for 4 hours when the case was first open, and he totally went with it. He told them everything. He was really understanding.
That's a long time.
I know. 4 hours is a long time to be interrogated.
I wonder if he got a snack.
Probably a month-old burrito. Probably asked for that by name.
Yeah,
he was like, I don't want this fresh burrito.
Get this out of my sight.
Get it. I need.
Go age it.
It's like a nice aged wine.
Right.
Or cheese or something. I don't know. Sorry, Jim, if that's not right. We're going to call him Jim from now on because I feel like we're friends. So the other unfortunate thing about this is that he was removed as a professor from Yale University and was given the title of lecturer, which just means he isn't paid as much. And he actually had to move away from Connecticut in order to find another job, despite the fact that he was a suspect for about 4 days and then was declared innocent for this case. So that kind of sucks.
That sucks, yeah.
Especially since he was respected by his students, which is really important for a teacher, because you want them to obviously connect with their students and motivate them and all that stuff. And he had really high reviews, so that was unfortunate. He did, however, file a case against the New Haven Police Department, and it was settled in 2013, and he won $200,000 from it. And he now works for Johns Hopkins University. So I feel like he's doing okay now.
That's an upgrade.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Johns Hopkins, Yale, they're both Ivy League, but at the same time.
But he won a lawsuit, so he probably has a lot of money new burritos.
Yeah, $200,000.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think I did not hear you say that.
I did say that, yeah.
Okay.
That was our first suspect.
Okay.
So Yeah, so.
He's out.
X. Okay. Number two is called The Running Man. So if you remember, as far back as episode one, in our timeline, we have a female motorist tell the police that she saw a man, a white male, sprint past her and disappear into this church, which was right across the street from where Suzanne's body was found. So she saw him running at about like 10 o'clock-ish, and she called it frantic. So that's the guy who's the running man. For those of you who read the descriptions, I will have a picture of what she told police the guy looked like. We had a very in-depth conversation about how attractive he was, because he is. So that's the guy. So just another fact about the running man is that he was seen wearing a green jacket. So that's another little piece of evidence there.
Okay.
So.
Green jacket.
Green jacket. Running
man. Is that important later?
That'll be important
in my
next suspect.
You said it like
suspect.
It was important.
Yes. So. The next person I'm going to talk to you about is the one that's really interesting. So all we know is that the guy is called Billy. The most information is on Billy, and he seems to be the most likely person that would have done it. So ding, ding, ding. Billy's our guy.
Okay.
I agree with this. You can tell me if you agree with me later,
okay.
But let's just dig in because he's really weird and interesting. Okay, so the official first name of Billy has not been released by the police department, so this is not his real name. An acquaintance of Billy named Giles Carter, that is his real name.
That's a cool name.
I know, it's very interesting.
Everyone has cool names.
I know, it's What's up, New Haven? Okay.
Giles Carter.
Giles Carter, who lived literally on the street where Suzanne was found, said that Billy had mental issues and that he had told him, and I quote, that he was obsessed with the murder of Suzanne Jovan, unquote. So apparently Billy said this to Giles when they were out walking one day after Billy had either been off his meds or had previously overdosed and was dealing with a clapback of the overdose. So there was something off in Billy's character and with his medication while he was saying this. So that's sort of what concerned Giles, because Billy had social issues and mental disorder. So
do we know what his medication was for?
We don't know anything personal about Billy, unfortunately.
So
just because
it could have been anything.
I mean, I don't know if it was just depression. I don't know if it was an anxiety disorder. It could have been any number of things. I don't know if it was schizophrenia. I have no idea. And all of that information is protected by the police, and I will tell you why. So
I feel like being interested in a murder does not make you a murderer.
Right.
Because if that were the standard, we would be murderers. And we're not.
And we're not murderers. I can tell you that with absolute certainty.
Is that all we have against Billy?
No. So we have some more information about him, which is why I sort of was like, oh, okay, Billy, I see you over there in the corners. Don't hide.
Okay.
So Giles also said Billy had problems with women because of his mental state. In an article from the New Haven Register, Carter says, quote, I think he had a hard time being in a room with a woman, but he was really drawn to them, end quote. I don't know. And I see that a lot in major serial cases.
Yeah.
Serial killer cases. It clicked for me when his friend said that he had trouble being in a room with women, but he was obsessed with them. Like, he would talk about them all the time. He was obsessed with Suzanne, who had just been murdered. Like, that's, I don't know. The connection was there, and that made me It put a little light in my head. So Giles also mentioned that Billy, quote, flew into a fit of rage, unquote, when he was rejected by women.
Oh, no. Now, okay.
I know. So it
Billy.
Just, yeah, Billy, get
please
your crap
stop.
Together. I know. Like, come on. Stop being mean when women reject you.
You know what? Just be nice. And then maybe women won't reject you.
Yeah. Be nice and women may or may not reject you. I don't know.
And if they still reject you, then, oh, well.
Yeah. They have the right to reject you. So ultimately, Billy wasn't looked into as a true suspect by the police, but the underbelly of this case and all the true crime obsessed people mention him as a suspect even more than the Running Man suspect, who was seen at the scene of the crime. Like, he was there.
By one person,
granted. But nobody's saw anything happen to Suzanne. So if one person saw something, I feel like, I don't know.
Yeah.
This case is weird with the eyewitness stuff. It's really strange.
Billy sounds a little guilty.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. That's a lot unfair to say someone murdered someone just because of a statement and...
Right. Absolutely. And I think the police did the best they could with what they had. And just one friend coming forward and saying
hearsay.
He was weird. Exactly.
That wouldn't
it's absolutely hearsay.
Be admissible
it's all
in court.
Circumstantial. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual murder. Anyway.
Well, unless the friend testified. Sorry.
Exactly. So.
Correction.
Unfortunately for this case, Billy was killed in 2012 during a car accident. He hit a Jersey barrier on I-95 in Connecticut. He got out of the car and walked into incoming traffic, where he was hit by a car and died on the scene due to head trauma.
No,
so,
I feel bad.
I know. So this was clearly a suicide, and I believe his death is the reason why his last name and his real first name aren't released to the public, and why a lot of his information about his mental illness and about Giles Carter didn't really... I don't know. It just, the suicide messed things up. So,
if
that was kind of a disaster.
They were convinced it was him, if there was enough evidence to prove it, then we would know who he was.
Absolutely.
But,
because this is a high profile case at this point.
That's really sad. I feel bad for Billy and his family, but can't help but thinking that
it may have been a guilty conscience.
An admission of guilt.
Yeah. There's another fact that Carter came forward with, Giles Carter. He said that Billy looks a lot like the Running Man, and he was in Billy was an architect student at Yale, and he carried X-Acto knives around, which could have been what was used to kill Suzanne.
Because yes, it's a flimsy knife that
exactly.
broke off.
So if you remember...
Oh, it's coming together.
Yeah. Part of the murder weapon was found in one of the head wounds on Suzanne's body. So a flimsy X-Acto knife could have broken off very easily during the attack.
That would also make sense that she was still alive when the doctor got there because...
Yeah.
An X-Acto knife, not that deep of a stab.
No, it's a small little blade.
And that would make sense why you would have to stab someone 17 times.
For it to be effective.
Because you have such a small
blade. Yeah. You know. And apparently Billy has a green jacket. That was another thing that Giles Carter came forward with. Which
okay,
was...
Well, I have a green jacket.
I know. I have a green jacket. So the last little theory that we have for this case is her thesis paper. I told you to remember it.
I remembered.
I'm so excited that you remembered. Okay. So some people believe that Suzanne was killed due to the content of her thesis project. Can you guess what the content of her thesis project was, being a political science student in 1998?
Can I have a clue?
Okay. Okay. So think of a group.
Terrorism.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, but.
Yeah. No, it was Al-Qaeda. So her thesis paper focused on the terror group Al-Qaeda. And conspirators think that the content of her paper, which focused specifically on Osama bin Laden, was the reason that she was killed. Her attorney for the case, David Rosen, even said when asked about the connection, he said, quote, "We exchanged some comments about it," end quote.
So what, Osama bin Laden put a hit on Suzanne Jovan to be killed via X-Acto knife 17 times? This makes no sense.
Yeah, no. Okay.
I think Billy did it.
Billy, I don't think I found any connection with Billy and Suzanne. So, of course, there was that email that we had mentioned before that she had sent out saying that she was going to go get study materials from someone. So I still think that someone is who killed her, whoever that someone is, if it's Billy, if it's not.
Why do you think that?
So because she was going to go pick up those study materials and drop them off in the morning. So this is late at night. She's going to go get them and then leave them in the morning, which she specifically says in her email, for her friend. So whoever the mysterious someone was, I feel like that might have been the last person to see her alive, or it could have been the person who killed her.
Well, maybe.
Feelings, but.
Maybe Billy set it up to get the study materials, maybe asked her out and she rejected him. And
yeah, exactly.
Then
and then
was
he
like,
lost
I can't
it.
Control my feelings.
So
I'm
going to kill
man.
You, which is horrible. Yeah. So I don't know. There's a lot of different theories
that's a good
that
theory.
Go with. I know. It's really interesting. And really, that profile could fit anyone. There's a lot of things. And there's just not enough evidence to find anyone. And
right. There's
still an open call line, which drives me insane. And nobody... Oh, man. It's just a lot. Okay. Anyway. So... The case reopens several different times. So we see it in 2002, when the Hartford Courant, which is a newspaper, as well as a friend of Vandeveld, Jimmy, his name is Jeffrey Mitchell, the friend, they applied to have the case files released to the public, which was at first denied by the department and by the Jovan family because of some of the sensitive information in the case. They asked for 4,500 documents and a 911 call to be made public. The judge granted this, but then the city filed for an appeal. So it was a while before the documents were ever released, but that's how we got the information about the email, was this first FOIA case.
Request.
Exactly. Request. Thank you. And then it was opened again in 2009 with the stupid DNA thing. And then in September 2017. Which is the most recent opening. So the New Haven Police Department reopened and they called it a high profile case in an attempt to solve the crime. There are no new suspects, which whatever. But the case was reopened after a film documentary crew tried to access the case files under the Freedom of Information Act again. The department denied access and at the hearing claimed the case was still ongoing, despite the state chief attorney, Kevin Kane, Chief Kane, dismissing the investigative team that was hired.
They were just saluted.
What, he's the chief? I don't know. So he dismissed the investigative team that was hired to solve the case about 2 years ago. So that's kind of weird that he dismissed it. And then in 2017, they were like, no, it's still active. We're still doing stuff. Like, are you? I don't know. But anyway, so the department also stated in 2017 that they were planning on using hypnotists on several of the witnesses to help them remember exactly what they saw that night. Now, from the list of people that I saw and just from who I talked about in the timeline, there were a ton of witnesses. So that kind of makes sense. But hypnotism, I'm a skeptic when it comes to that sort of stuff. Mm. I believe in ghosts, but I don't believe in hypnotists. The people on campus who saw her leave, to the numerous amount of homeowners in the area who heard screams and who found her so quickly to the point of where she was still alive when they found her. It's just insane the amount of people that were involved. And yet we have our unknown 35 minutes. The police are just sort of scrambling at this point to find who killed her. It's been 20 years. It's going to be 20 years this December. So it's just a lot. There is now also a reward out for any information, and the State of Connecticut Division of Criminal Justice issued this statement, and I quote, Suzanne Jovan, a talented and popular senior at Yale University, was stabbed to death near the corner of Edge Hill Road and East Rock Road in New Haven on December 4th, 1998. In June of 2007, New Haven State Attorney Michael Darrington called together a team of retired Connecticut State Police detectives to undertake an independent inquiry into the murder. This team reevaluated all information from prior inquiries into the murder and is now seeking out information not previously known to authorities. The investigation is now handled by the Division of Criminal Justice Cold Case Unit, which continues to pursue investigative leads. The Jovan investigative team also continues to devote a significant amount of personal time as unpaid consultants to solve this case. The state of Connecticut has offered a reward up to $50,000 for information leading to the arrest and conviction of Suzanne Jovan's murderer. Yale University has committed an additional $100,000 to the reward. End quote. So there's a $150,000 reward out right now for information about Suzanne, and it has been out since 2017. Nobody's claimed it. I don't know about you, but I feel like if this had been done to a girl who looked different or who was...
No one would care.
Yeah, no. If it had been done to a Latina student or even a Black student, I feel like this would not be happening. And maybe that's
You're
me...
You're absolutely correct.
Maybe that's me just making an assumption, but I really
no,
do feel that that's
right. No, that's
not
an assumption. That would... No one would be putting money towards it. No one would care. And it would have been dropped... Like a week, week after, once they realized that no one saw anything.
Yeah, it's just, it's unfortunate. And there's a lot of proof.
Actually, wait, if a Latina or a Black girl were in that neighborhood, people would have seen something. That would have been noticeable.
Suburbia.
Right.
They would have taken notice of someone, I know they would have.
Right. And we're not saying that Suzanne doesn't deserve this.
Because she does.
But she definitely does. We're just saying...
If it had been someone different.
Everyone deserves it.
Absolutely. Everyone deserves this amount of attention, even if it's a 20-year-old case. If Billy was to be the murderer, he could plead a case of insanity, saying that he was not under the proper...
Honestly, that seems very fair and plausible.
So he can have a defense that the defendant committed under the prescribed act or acts under the influence of extreme emotional disturbance, for which there is no reasonable explanation or excuse, which basically is like... You can have a defense of insanity in the state of Connecticut, which in most states, that's what you can plead insane.
Right. But the court's deeming of someone to be insane is very different than if you are diagnosed with a mental illness.
So it's not like you can have any mental illness and then be that defend yourself under the insanity clause. You have to have an actual disease.
Well, even if you have that, the court has to do an evaluation.
That. Yeah. And it's a psychiatric evaluation and it's really intense, apparently. I don't know.
And they have a very high bar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to be.
Bar.
LOL. The bar exam. What?
The bar.
We're going to.
The bar association.
You're going to have to take that exam. Just saying. Oh, we're both pre-law students, if you guys didn't know. Yeah, so bar exam. Woohoo. You know, I'm so mad that nobody has come forward with any information or that nothing was seen. Like, it may be that nobody saw anything, which is nuts. And it just may be that weird instance of, like, an odd 35 minutes that were only, like, experienced by Suzanne and her killer. And I think that's horrible. Okay, well, that's the unsolved murder.
I love that story, Claire.
Thank you.
Good job. Thanks for telling her story, because...
I know, you're
welcome. I think it was told a lot initially, but it's kind of dwindled and lost.
It has. She was so lovely, and she was so smart, and obviously was going to make an impact on the world, and it's just a bummer what happened, and that nobody knows anything. So, well,
good vibes to Suzanne's family, and to Billy's family, and to and Jimmy and his burritos.
Yeah, and Jimmy and his burritos. Do what you want, Jimmy, but maybe see a doctor about all those month-old burritos.
Right.
Probably not healthy for you.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening to part 3 of the Unsolved Murder of Suzanne Jovan.
Thanks for listening. Bye.